Hi Nick, how are you doing?
Hi Martin, yeah, I'm good, thank you. You okay?
Good, yes, not bad at all, thanks. Not bad at all.
Fantastic. How was MicroConf?
It was really good as always, yeah. Really good. It was different dates this year, a bit earlier, which I didn't even twig until after I booked my ticket, but it was like the beginning of August rather than the end of August, beginning of September, which meant there was a bit of a different crowd there.
Okay.
Because, of course, the first 2 weeks in August is generally holiday time in Europe. There was a bit of a different crowd, but it was still good. Yeah, really good.
Come back with plans of working on the same idea, or have you...
Yeah, I've decided to throw it out completely, and it's a brand new product. Yeah, no. Kept stuck with the same idea. Definitely trying to avoid shiny object syndrome, but came away with lots of ideas, as always. Met some decent, you know, some really good people, as always, and it was quite a different experience actually having a product with customers.
Yeah.
Because although it's only four customers, it was it was quite interesting having conversations that were, I don't know, I suppose understanding people a bit more about the sort of different things that pull you, you know, as opposed to just thinking, how am I going to market this thing? It's kind of how you're going to deal with everything at the same time as trying to market it and all that. So yeah, it was good. It was good for that.
Yeah, we'll go through some of the perhaps tactics or things you're going to work on there.
Yeah,
in a little bit, I guess. So it's been well. By the time this comes out, it'll be 4 weeks, won't it, since we did an episode. We had a break.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. So I was away at MicroConf, or rather, away on my holiday before MicroConf. So that was when we should have recorded. So yeah, we missed it.
And I did threaten to do an interview, but I didn't get around to it.
Never mind. It's the holidays. We're allowed to take a break.
Oh, I was busy working, actually.
Oh, were you?
Did you listen to our last episode?
I re-listened to it. Yes, I did.
Is that one of the first few that you've listened to of us yourself doing a podcast?
Well, obviously, when I do the editing,
you do the editing, don't you? So, yeah,
I do listen to it, but I don't cut much out. To be honest, I just really cut the beginning and the end. So I do listen to most of it, though.
Yeah, I listened to it today to catch up on what we spoke about last time, which is good actually, because I was going to talk a lot about the golf directory stuff, but I guess I did that last time, so don't need to cover that again. But yeah, so I think when I spoke last time on the podcast, I was saying about how the following week was going to be hectic, which it was, because I had a trip to do somewhere, Gloucester, wasn't it, and then I had friends coming down. But then I nicely had 2 weeks imbued of not having to go anywhere or do anything, and so those were the 2 weeks that I focused on getting quite a bit of work done, actually, which
fantastic.
Was nice.
Fantastic. Yeah. So, do you want to dive straight in and tell us what you've been up to then?
Yeah, so I'll save most of the podcast for you, because I want to learn all the stuff that you learnt at MicroConf. But for VoucherCodes Pro, I did some work on that. So we still think we're under some kind of penalty with the site and stuff, and so we have been looking at the pages on the site that aren't getting any organic search hits. Because there's pages that we rank well for, and then there's pages that we don't rank anywhere, and there's no kind of rhyme or reason why that I've been able to figure out anyway, or we've been able to figure out as to, you know, why certain pages rank well and others don't. So we have taken the viewpoint of, if a page doesn't get any organic traffic from Google, that Google doesn't think that page is of high enough quality,
right?
And so we're just deleting it and getting rid of it, because there's no point in having it on the site if it's not getting any traffic to it anyway. So we're hoping we're going to be reducing the number of what Google thinks are low-quality pages, and see if that has any effect on getting our rankings back to where they were one day.
Right, okay, that sounds like a good plan, yeah.
Been testing a little bit as well with the titles of some pages and meta descriptions as well, to try and improve the click-through rate, which people have been saying has quite a big dramatic effect on search rankings, which I've not really done too much of before. So yeah, I've been doing that for VoucherCodes Pro. For golf.io, or the whole golf idea in general, I said about kind of the golf directory being a shiny new idea last podcast, and I decided to actually focus on that as the main idea for the time being. So for the past couple of weeks, or 3 weeks now, I guess I've been working on building out that directory. I have literally just got a design through today from a designer who was doing one for me. So all the back end work is done. Just need to apply the design to it now to make it kind of look better, and then I'll be going from there. One of the reasons why I've kind of decided to make it a focus thing is, as I was building it out, really, I just wanted something different to work on for a week almost, and as I was building it out, I kind of thought, well, it kind of makes sense to make this a bit of a main focus, as I was kind of inputting some real data and looking at various Golf Pros websites and stuff, and even thinking about the three or four that I have done for the Golf Pros. And the whole idea of the directory is, you know, to have it broken up by counties, and then you click on a golfer, and I'd have a profile page for them that would look nice and well designed, and based on the about.me profile page design and look and feel.
Right.
And that what kind of occurred to me is that look and feel is what all that a lot of golfers need. The three or four golfers I have done websites for, there's the whole blogging functionality is there in the background, but none of them are using it.
Yeah.
And so rather than having, you know, a site with basic contact information and stuff like that, and then a blog that's never updated, I think most golf pros do just need a single page that they can use as almost like their business card type site, and you know, it will help them get found by Google if someone Googles their name or so on. So yeah, this is kind of why I redirected my idea to this, and also as well because inputting all these golf pros and, you know, building up my own little database of all their contact information as well, I was doing this within an Excel spreadsheet anyway when I was doing outreach to the golf pros, and so having them in a database will just make that kind of outreach and marketing effort afterwards a lot easier. And I will have a good reason to contact them as well, because I'd be saying, you know, I'm building out this directory, I've included you, you know, do you want to upload your own custom photo that makes you look good and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm quite excited by it, actually.
That's good. But I have to ask the question with my new MicroConf Learnings hat on.
Yeah.
When are you going to actually get to outreaching to these people then? Is this just a distraction, or is it something sort of essential? Do you know what I mean?
No, So the design I'll probably have implemented on the site by the end of next week. I've got 2 days again next week where I'm coming back to Reading, fully enough, so we might be able to hook up for a drink.
Oh, cool.
Because I've got to sort out the house in Reading still to get it ready for renting it out.
Yeah.
So I'll only have 2, maybe 3 days to work next week. So hopefully I'll get the design implemented on the site. I've kind of done most of Berkshire with the pros added, so I can kind of start outreaching to the people then.
Yeah.
And I've worked out it takes, with all the procrastination of adding a pro, then going off to Facebook for 10 minutes, then add another pro, it takes me about 2 days to do a county. So
that's not too bad, though.
No, it's not, and I kind of thought, you know, I can either outsource some of the data entry or even get Sophie onto it. But
yeah, well, once you've got it, if you can sort of record yourself doing it, and then you can outsource that to somebody, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. So then once the pro is added, I can kind of outreach to him, and it's good. Again, another reason for looking at this is having looked at all the pros in Berkshire. Some of them have got websites already, and they're so outdated, and they've got like copyright 2012 at the bottom of their site and all that kind of stuff. And you kind of think, well, they would be better off switching to a more modern, just profile page type site.
Yeah.
That this profile directory, is going to provide for them. So we'll see.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, definitely. It'd be good to see how that goes.
Yeah. And then I think once, because the original idea was this CRM type application for lesson notes and so on. Once I have a lot of pros added to the system, and whether I have a relationship built up with them or not through the outreach, I can then send an email out to everyone saying, you know, this is the idea I'm thinking of doing, would you be interested in paying for this type of thing or not, and do a bit of research, I guess, or customer research before actually committing to building that big piece of work.
Do you think you'll do any calling of them and talking to them face to face rather than or on the phone or anything rather than just email?
No, I'll probably email them, and if they reply, I'll jump on the phone with them afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a warm phone call rather than a cold phone call.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Cool, sounds good. It sounds exciting. So at the next podcast, then hopefully you'll have started doing that.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Brilliant indeed.
See how it goes. Yeah. Yep. I think I might nick that idea if it goes well.
Welcome to it.
Thank you. So for me, then, obviously I've been away in Barcelona at MicroConf, which was amazing. We went as a family for the 4 days before, so the MicroConf started on the on the Sunday evening, and we went out on the Wednesday with Silvano and Lois. So we found a nice hotel in Barcelona which had a decent sized pool outside as well. So we'd highlighted last year, we went as well for a few days before MicroConf, and we did. we basically run poor little Lois ragged around Barcelona, just going to all the tourist spots and on the tourist bus and stuff like that, and it was too much for her, really. She was just bored senseless. So this time we decided there are two things that we still want to do. So let's do those two things, but other than that, we'll just stay by the pool, chill out, you know, wander around, whatever we want to do. And so that's what we did, and it was excellent, really, really good. A nice break for all of us. Yeah. And then they flew home on the Sunday, and I went to Microconf, which was really, really good. So there were a few people missing. As I said, it was on different dates. So Ed McArdle, who's usually my partner in crime there, he was gone. He was away on holiday, I think, so he wasn't there. But Robin Warren, who we interviewed on the podcast, he was there. So I met up with him and met a lot of new people. So it was really good. But there was it was funny because like I said, we had a few days off before, and I thought, I was thinking about, you know, so what are the main things I want to get out of this Microconf? You know, let's make it as useful as possible. And so I started to think about what it is I need to do. A bit more background is that obviously my freelancing, I say obviously, perhaps it's not so obvious, but my freelancing contract is basically at an end, the one that I was doing. Last podcast we said, I said that it was just about to finish, so that finished. And I've also let my developer go.
All right.
Because obviously I'm not getting money coming in from the freelance contract, and so it made sense to let him go. And so now it's all down to me, which is a bit scary, but it's okay as well. And yeah, so I was thinking, what is it that I need to do? And one of the main problems I have, I think, which sucks productivity, you know, completely destroys productivity, is the anxiety of having to deal with the support requests and having to make sure everything's set up for a demo and bringing people on board and all this stuff was creating a lot of anxiety. And so before Microconf, my thoughts were, so what I need to do now is spend time getting the code done so that customers can do their own support rather than relying on me to do all the, you know, all the admin stuff that I was doing. And so that was my plan, really. It was my main thoughts of going into Microconf work, free up some time, and then I can focus on some tactics for getting new customers. And then pretty much the first night, talking to people on the Sunday night at Microconf, and they were all saying, but you've only got 4 customers. You need more leads. That's your problem. You need more leads. Don't worry about that. It's, you know, it may be a problem, but but there's no point spending a week, 2 weeks working on that if you haven't got enough customers to make the product a goer, so you need more leads. And that was really the theme of the weekend, was just reinforcing the fact that, you know, unless it's going to be a goer, there's no point in actually doing any work on it. So
yeah.
The focus is leads now. Now Ed, actually, although he wasn't there, he put me on to saying I should speak to a guy that was going to be there called Damian Thompson,
okay.
Who's a sales coach, but he's now actually working with Lead Fuse. He was at the conference sort of in his Lead Fuse role, and he was really in demand. Lots of people wanted to speak to him, so Ed said I should go and talk to him about my sales process, as if I had a sales process. But I did go and speak to him, and he came up with some you know, it was only a really brief conversation because, like I say, he was in demand. I actually spoke to him a few times, but the key things to come out of it. So my sales process really has been cold call them or somehow get hold of them, but there's an initial call at any rate to talk about what they do and whether they're interested and whether the product's right for them. So I guess that's kind of a bit of qualification. And then once we've gone through that call, then doing a demo with them. And then after the demo, what I do is I hand them over a test system, so that they can play about with it and make sure it's right for them. And then if that's okay, then we go into the sort of going live, you know, bringing them onto the live system. And it's a really long-winded process. But of course, I've been excusing it because it's early days. So I've been thinking, that's fine, it's early days, we can do that. But the idea, the problem is, it's not that great. It's too long-winded, and it needs to get down because it takes a lot of time. But anyway, the talking to Damien, he sort of came up with the idea that probably if you're going to be cold calling people and doing so much hands-on type stuff, they need to be worth at least £1,000 a year. So going on from that and talking to a few other people, I kind of think that I need to maybe combine the demo step with setting them up in the test system, or either demoing them a generic demo and then, instead of setting them up in the test system, signing them up for real in the live system, and so they can have a look at it in the live system, you know, so you're now a customer. So that's something that I'm going to have to work on. And then the other thing that came out of it was charging for the setup. Mm-hmm. You know, which I think was probably going to be on the cards anyway, but that's something that I'm going to be looking to as well, is once, I don't know what the magic number is, once we've got a number of customers on board, saying, okay, you've seen the demo, now we'll put you on the live system. If you want help setting your clubs up and everything, then that's X amount of money. So those are the sorts of things that came out of it, which was good, I think. Helped clarify some stuff in my own mind. And obviously speaking to other people there that do similar jobs. So one of the talks was by a guy called James Kennedy from rubberstamp.io. And he'd had history with products that were doing well and then not so well. And he started Rubberstamp, which is purchase order management. And they've got a really high-touch onboarding process. So as soon as somebody signs up with them, they get an email within 5 minutes. Well, not an email, they get a phone call within 5 minutes. So basically they're monitoring all new sign-ups, and within 5 minutes of them signing up, they get a phone call from someone at Rubberstamp to say, look, how are things going? Are you all right? Do you need some help? And all that sort of stuff, which I thought was amazing and really quite interesting that they're still doing that, you know, when they've got to such a level. But they say that that's just working really, really well for them. They've got a bit of a higher price point than I have.
That's what I was just about to ask, what was their price point? Yeah,
I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but they've got a higher price point, which means it's probably more worthwhile for them. But that idea of letting them sign up and then part of the onboarding process is straight away getting in there saying, do you need some help? You know, you don't have to make the phone call necessarily, it could be something else. That's something that sort of struck me as something I could probably think about doing, adding in. At the moment, they can't even sign up on their own, but I think when they can, that's something that I'll probably put in. Something that came out, actually, of Microsoft, sorry, I'm flip-flopping all over the place here, but something that came out of it was there are a lot of companies that would get to around about 20,000 monthly recurring revenue, and then they hit a kind of a plateau, and growth stops. Mm. And it was really weird. So there's a lady from Prodpad that was talking, and I should have had her name to hand, Jana, I think it is, but I'll put it in the show notes. She was saying that that's exactly what happened with them as well, and other people that were in the room that also have SaaS products that have got to a similar amount have experienced this. And you just basically need to change something, you know, you need to look at what you're doing, look at your profile, your customer profiles, and rework it somehow to make it jump over that and start growth again. So that's I hope to get to that level of monthly recurring revenue to have that problem. But that was an interesting thing that came out from a lot of people. And so my takeaways, really, I think, are that I need to get more leads and I need to get customer personas. So a lot of people were talking about this idea of defining who your customers are and creating these customer personas, which, you know, you might have startup SID or something, you know, who, and then you'd actually flesh out who that person is, how old they are, where they go, what they do, all that sort of stuff, so that you can focus your marketing around them. So that's something as well that I've taken out that I think I'd like to do. But it's difficult when you've only got four customers.
Yeah.
So what I've done is, since MicroConf, I've bought a list. So I went to one of these marketing companies and I bought a list. They had a list that covered after-school clubs, and so I bought that.
Oh, that's good.
And I'm going to do a mixture of cold email and cold calling to start off with. So goal number one is to get maybe 100 customers cold called. And sorry, not cold called, cold emailed, which, of course, taking two steps back from that, I need to actually write the email, draft the email that I'm going to send to those people. But I also, I think I need to have a decent web page that they can go to. So what I'm going to try and do is get a new theme put into the website. So if I do send them an email and they click a link to go to the website, then they get a decent page, you know, where they can actually give me their email address nicely. And I'm also going to ask them to reply to that email to try and set up a demo. So kind of two calls to action. Well, one call to action, which is, you know, reply to the email and we'll start a conversation. And then the other call to, and then the other thing will be like in the subject, in the signature, a link to the website. And if they go that route, then hopefully they'll click the button to give me their email address and set up a demo.
But you've already got their email address.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I guess what I'm more thinking about is getting them to sign up for a demo.
Yeah.
But so the website, I want to have the call to action to be sign up for a demo rather than just give me their email address.
You're quite good at doing the cold calling thing, though. You don't seem to mind doing it as much as me. So rather than waiting to get all of that stuff built, I'd start with a cold calling experiment first. And if you have success at that, then just you can carry on, can't you?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point.
I'd delay 2 weeks then to get all this other stuff done.
Yeah, the problem with the cold calling is it's so time consuming, you know. I've done a fair bit of it, and I've got a bit of success from it, but it takes, you know, a couple of hours to get through to a few people, I find. But maybe that is the thing to do.
How many details you were able to buy from that marketing company?
So what I did was I bought the email list, which is about 550 people. And yep. They're not all emails, so not all of those have got email addresses, but it's a mixture of postal, email, and telephone numbers. So that's about 550, and I've sort of got a load more from various websites that I've screen scraped. So I've brought those details in as well. So I've probably got about 600 or 700 that I can get in touch with.
That's good.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know. So what I'm thinking with this cold emailing is I don't know which way is going to work. And another thing that James Kennedy was talking about from Rubber Stamp was that they kind of picked up on doing a different tactic every day. So cold emailing, cold calling, you know, whatever, Facebook advertising, whatever. And I think maybe that's probably a bit much for me to do, but I was thinking if I split it into two, maybe did some cold emails and some cold calls, that might be all right.
Are the email addresses personal email addresses or like corporate contacts?
It's a mixture, really, but I think a lot of them will be. A lot of the clubs, unless they've got staff, you know, and are fairly well developed, are going to be, you know, Google emails or Yahoo emails.
You could, what you could do is go through this, be a pain in the bum to go through all the email addresses, but go through the email addresses, pick out, so you just have a list of the personal email addresses. And you can create an audience on Facebook, can't you, based on those email addresses?
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
And so then, for the week before you cold call them, you could set up an ad on Facebook to display them something about the name of your company and stuff. So it's kind of like planting the seed in their mind. And then magically, you just so happen to call them the week after.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of you guys.
That's a good point, actually, because I did also speak to Rob Walling. I managed to call Rob Walling for 15 minutes. And he was talking about a book. Is it The Ultimate Sales Machine?
Yeah, I've read that. It's good.
Yeah, I've got it, and I'm reading it. So, and he was talking about, you know, you identify your 100 best customers, and then you email them, and then you email them, and then you send them a letter, and then all this sort of stuff. So there were some good ideas that came out of that as well. The key thing is, whatever I choose to do, I need to get more leads in the top of the funnel and before concentrating on the code. So This last week has been a lot of catching up, really. So I effectively took 2 weeks off in total, because the first week was finishing off the freelancing contract, then I was away, and then I got back and I spent a couple of days faffing about, really. And so, unfortunately, this week I've been doing a lot of catch up, so I haven't had much chance to do any of it. But I think I just need to do the support and nothing else apart from trying to get leads into the top of the funnel.
Mm. Makes sense.
Those are really that's really what came out of my my microconf experience.
Cool.
These persona things I think are a good idea, which I'll probably try and build as I go. Like I say, I've got four customers and I can probably get a sketch outline of what the personas might be. But I don't think it'll be that detailed. But obviously the more leads I get, then that would probably help. So yeah, that's
it. The 600 or 700 email addresses or contact details you bought.
Mm.
That's not the. There's not only 600 or 700 kids clubs in the UK, is there?
That's no, just... there's a lot more than that. Yeah, there's a lot more than that. That's just what they've got in the, and it's just one category of club as well that they had. They didn't. So I was surprised to even find it, to be honest. I didn't think they'd have a category that distinct.
Mm.
but they did, so I thought, well, I'll just buy it and go with it. There are loads more. I mean, I actually searched for the ones that I've got that are already customers in the list to see if they're on there, and none of them were. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that I know there are a lot more than that. So,
that's
all right. Yeah. So anyway, back to MicroConf. So there were loads of speakers, and I think the first day was less actionable than the second. There were some interesting things that came out of it, though. So Mike Tabor did a talk about drawing the lines between success and failure.
Yep.
So the idea was, he did a survey of people that have started businesses, sort of in the micropreneur, not the micropreneur academy, but the community, you know. And he only got 60 responses, so the stats weren't that sort of statistically significant or whatever, but it was quite interesting. What he was trying to do was give you some guidelines on to look at when you're saying, okay, well, I'm building this product. Have I spent too long on it, too much money on it, is it going to be a goer, should I give up, you know, so whether you're on the right track or not, based on some stats that other people have experienced. And so he had, like, you know, this bunch of stats is from the people that never actually got a successful product out the door, or they got a product out the door and it wasn't successful, and this set of stats were for the people that did. And it was really interesting, because I was looking at them thinking, oh my God, that's me. You know, I'm in that camp that says that it's not going to be a successful product. And mainly because of the amount of money spent. So they had a... So the sort of success lines, don't quote me on this, but sort of from my notes, it was around 8 to 12 hours of customer development. So you've done 8 to 12 hours of customer development up front. You spent less than $2,000 on... you know, on getting your product to where it is. 6 to 9 months of effort, and the revenue ramp is quite slow, so your revenue ramps up slowly. That's kind of the guidelines of people that ended up with a successful product. And the thing that scared the shit out of me was the £2,000, $2,000, whatever you want to say it, of expenditure, because obviously having a developer working on the product, it was a lot higher than that for me. And so I was getting quite worried, because I'd spent 6 to 9 months... roughly, probably a bit more in actual fact. Revenue ramp is really slow, because I've basically got 4 customers, and 8 to 12 hours of customer development was probably about right in terms of the initial work I did, you know, calling people and going to see people and talking to them. So I actually collared Mike after this talk and said, you know, I'm a bit worried about this. That number that you quoted about $2,000 spent, did that include on developers? He's, oh, no, that didn't include developers. And so I breathed a sigh of relief, because yeah. I kind of started to fit back into those criteria. Now, I don't think those criteria are kind of hard and fast rules or anything, because there's not enough survey respondents, but it was quite interesting to hear his talk and see the numbers. And there were specific kind of different camps based on those statistics. But he's still collecting data, and I think he's planning on releasing a report at some point, you know, when he's got more data in and all the rest of it.
So was there one particular statistic of the successful companies that you could pull out?
Not really. No, you had to kind of take all the things together, I think. And it was quite different between SaaS companies and sort of downloadable software companies as well. I think mainly because what was happening was with SaaS companies, and this was another theme of the conference actually, was people were talking about SaaS companies, and it takes a long, long, long time to get to a decent amount of money, whereas downloadable software, within 12 months they were seeing a high amount of money coming in. And that was quite an interesting thing. Yeah, I mean, I haven't got the stats to hand on the differences, but I'm sure if you watch out for Mike Tabor, you'll see the report come out.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, it was good. So Rob Walling, obviously, I think between our last podcast and this one, he sold Drip. Is that right?
I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast, though.
No. So he sold Drip to Lead Pages.
Yeah. So I'm quite disappointed about it, to be honest.
Are you?
Yeah. Not like it sounds like I've got some personal investment in it, but I obviously haven't. But yeah, go on, carry on anyway.
Well, it was interesting listening to him. I mean, obviously, he's under NDA, so there were no real insights into the sale or anything, but he was kind of talking about going through his experiences and why it actually happened that way. And it was amazing to see some of the stuff that he was talking about, because obviously his Drip's in a really high growth area and high competition, and it's been growing massively, and some of the numbers he was showing was amazing. Well, some of the sort of graphs and stuff of the ramp up of income and monthly recurring revenue was amazing. But he was also saying that to be able to keep up with the competition, whenever you sort of make a step forward with growth, you have to hire more people and you have more sort of resources that you need to spend money on. You know, if it's an email marketing product, so it needs more servers, the more customers you have and all that. And so they were basically continually chasing growth, but at the same time they're chasing growth, they've got more expenditure because you need to bring on more staff and so on. And he had his criteria for what makes a happy life and stuff, and he wasn't really meeting them because he was spending more time doing things like HR than he was writing blog posts. And so he thinks like his purpose is, what he really likes doing is like the teaching element of you know, doing the podcast and writing and stuff like that, and he wasn't able to do any of that because he was continually working flat out on drip. And there are lots of other things around that, but it seemed like there were lots of things they wanted to do to try and make growth even better for drip and to get some sort of stability in terms of, you know, we've got some money to put into this, therefore we don't have to continually grow and then hire more people to do that thing and then grow and do more. And that's part of the reason that they went that way. It's kind of more of a sort of investment mentality rather than a just sell it for your sunset money, you know.
Mm.
So that was interesting. I mean, obviously, I don't know how much money they got for it, but I'm sure they got quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, but he also talked about this idea of, you know, stagnation when you get to around about 20,000 monthly recurring revenue, unless you keep changing things and working hard to push the growth on. So yeah, so the next day was much more actionable, I think, for me anyway, because that's when James Kennedy was talking about Rubber Stamp and the sorts of things he did, and also Steli Efti.
Yep.
He did a talk in the morning about sales processes and that sort of thing, and that was really good. Yeah.
Which was the best talk then?
It's a good question. I think
do you know if they recorded them?
I didn't see video cameras actually, so no, I'm not. I don't think they did.
They record the MicroConf US, don't they? But
yeah, I don't think they record the European one. Oh. Steli's was really good, I think. I mean, he was talking about, you know, when. Mainly, I think, direct selling on the phone sort of thing. Probably email counts as well. But he was talking about always follow up, you know, which is a key thing, I think. So I'm tempted to, if somebody doesn't reply to my email or doesn't want to speak to me, then I don't bother. But he was saying that he will always follow up and just keep following up and keep following up until they turn around and tell you, look, stop now, that's enough, you know.
Yeah.
Just keep following up. Because you never know what's going on at the other end of the wire or the other end of the phone. It may be they've just got busy. It may be, you know, something's happened in their life that means they're not concentrating on what it is you do. But always follow up until they tell you to stop, which I think is an interesting thing and something that I would never do. But from his talk, I took out that's probably something I will do from now on. Is keep following. I've got people that I've expressed an interest in the product back when I was first trying to develop it that I haven't spoken to for ages simply because they kind of went a bit cold on it. That doesn't mean they're not interested still, it just means that they weren't interested at that time, so I need to really follow up with them again and see if something can happen.
Mm.
So that was a really good talk. And one of my favourites was really by Peter Copping of Teamwork.
Right, yep.
That was more of an inspirational story than anything, because they were a sort of web development design agency, and they were managing all these projects, and they had a massive whiteboard with, you know, all the projects written all over the whiteboard and how they were trying to, what was happening with them and all that, and it wasn't working. And so they tried project management tools and they didn't do things the way they needed them to, and so they basically started to build Teamwork, which is the project management tool. And effectively it's the story of what you shouldn't do, which is basically build the product and then get customers. But they did it, and it was an amazing story. And they're like millions of pounds. I can't remember the number now. Is it 12 million a year?
That's more of a scratch in your own itch story though, isn't it? Because if no customers have used it, they'd have still used it themselves for their own consulting projects, I guess.
Yeah, they would have done, yeah. But they were spending a lot of time obviously building it, which right. is, you know, perhaps something that you shouldn't do. But yeah, and it was an amazing story. And they started to market, and there was kind of an inflection point in their growth. So they were growing fairly nicely, but the point where they bought the domain teamwork.com, then that was the point where the growth just started to go through the roof.
So it used to be Teamwork PM, didn't it, or something?
That's right, yeah. But
A couple of guys in the co-working space have been talking about it and giving it rave reviews and stuff. So.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's good. I think I'll put the link to, you know, Christoph Engelhardt does a summary of the notes from the talks.
Yeah,
I'll put that in the show notes because that's I can't obviously go into everything here, and there's, my memory is limited anyway. But that'd be worth having a look at.
Cool.
So, what are you planning on? Well, you've already told us, haven't you? You're going to be doing your directory for the next week.
That's it. Yeah, I'm going to be working on the design for that.
Yeah.
And, there is actually something live up at golf.io, but it looks terrible at the moment, so don't go and look at it. yeah, it should look nice for in a week or so, hopefully.
Excellent. Yeah, so I'm going to focus on leads, and I thought I decided before I started to speak to you that I was just going to cold email, but I think I'll have to think about whether I do cold email and calls as well.
Well, I get back in contact with all those people
follow up. Always
follow
be following
up. Follow
up
to all those people that you were in contact with before first, before you start learning new ones. But
yeah, that's true. I should always be following up, shouldn't I? That's the rule. That's Stelly's rule.
Got any stuff?
Only one thing, really. There's a guy I met at MicroConf. He's running a conference in Dublin for SaaS businesses. It's called SaaS Stock.
Okay, yeah, I think I've heard of that.
They've got... So they've got a bunch of venture capitalists going to be there talking, but they've also got a lot of other speakers. Des Trainer from Intercom. Again, Peter Copping from Teamwork, he's going to be there apparently, but I'll put a link in the show notes. It looks really interesting.
Cool.
Other than that, no, that's me.
So I got one thing and another thing just to chat about. Fixing Dad, a program that was on BBC, probably about 3-4 weeks ago now, actually. It is really worth watching. It's about two brothers whose dad had not looked after himself, eaten too much, drank too much, not exercised, and developed type 2 diabetes.
Mm.
And he went through the process of getting him cycling, eating a low carb diet, and he did the Ride London, whatever it's called, which is a 100-odd miles ride. And through all the healthy eating and exercise and weight loss and stuff, he reversed his type 2 diabetes.
Wow.
So, it's quite an emotional program to watch, actually. So you should definitely watch it. And it's only got 11 days left on iPlayer.
Yeah, I best watch it then.
I would go and it can be your evening watching tonight.
Yep, I'll have a look at that.
Yes, it's really good. And I remember last time I was talking about every kind of hobby or thing I try, I end up trying to think of a business idea around. Yeah. I think I found something that's not the case with.
Oh, excellent. What's that?
Surfing.
Surfing? Well, you're in the right part of the world for it.
Well, exactly, yeah. I was doing, well, not particularly surfing, but I was doing attempting bodyboarding last weekend. And I was really, really, really enjoyed it, actually. I had a great time. And while I was surfing and kind of after it and all that kind of stuff, I didn't have a single business idea around it. And I was kind of thinking, I wonder why. And I think the reason may well be is because a lot of the people who do surfing are youngsters or either, you know, students with no money. And so apart from owning a surf shop or a surf school, there's no real business ideas around surfing. So it's something that I can just do for the sake of doing.
That sounds good. Yeah, sounds excellent.
So there you go.
I say the right part of the world for surfing. I suppose the right part of the country is the best thing to say, isn't it?
Yes. Well, no, it is the right part. It is the right part of the world because it's got good waves and no sharks.
Ah, well, yes.
Not many sharks, not many man-eating sharks, I should say. Anyway.
Yeah, that sounds good, yeah, always.
Some of them might give you a little nip, but it doesn't happen very often, apparently.
Brilliant.
Cool.
All right, well, good to speak to you.
Yeah, you too. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has, and I'll speak to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, all right, cheers, Martin.
Cheers, then, bye.
Bye.